Okay, now we're recording.
So welcome to Teach Wonder. Yes, welcome to Teach Wonder. A podcast hosted by Ashley O'Neill and Julie Cunningham.
So my entire life, through college and working, through the late night study sessions and early morning babysitting gigs, the first 22 years was done without caffeine. I was a water girl who would occasionally get a tea or a coffee, read thinly veiled ice cream frappuccino thing with my friends, but that was totally for social and it was not for the awake intake. Cue student teaching. My first semester was tough. I had long drives every day and I had bumped my caffeine intake up to maybe a cup of coffee a week. I walk out of my second semester though, and I was drinking Diet Coke, sweet tea, and coffee every single day, multiple times a day. Why? We affect each other. The team I was with would rotate through who grabbed drinks for each other every morning. They were kind enough to include me, and I was grateful to be included, and sure, that icy pop of energy to keep up with the pace of working and student teaching, it was really helpful, and I was not saying no. We affect each other. After I left student teaching, those Diet Cokes faded as I realized that my preferred caffeine intake of choice was coffee with creamer. And it didn't hurt that my new teaching team shared a Coffee Mate creamer in the fridge every week. But still, had I stayed with that student teaching location and if I was a teacher there today, maybe I would have a mini fridge in my office for Coke cans instead of a collection of coffee mugs on my desk. Now, obviously, caffeine and pedagogical practices are far apart, but are they? Do you notice that you're affected by the teaching styles of your team, the culture of your school? I've worked in 3 schools, 4 grade level teams that rotated through a dozen of grade level partners. I've had 5 administrators, 3 different special education directors, and each work dynamic tugged at my teaching. From relatively small things like, at this school, March's reading month is a big deal. No, like it's a big deal. To the ways that we handled student data and talked about behaviors and structured our days. At each school, while I was learning and honing my own craft, I was also being affected by the school and the building and the people in it. And the trick is not to get rid of that influence. Some of it is fantastic, right? But the trick is to be aware, because I'm pretty sure I'm not alone when I say, I wake up every morning with the best of intentions, to be the best parent, the best partner, the best colleague, the best educator, but my intentions don't always make it to the end of the day. And some of that is the busyness of life and the tough days that we have, and some of it is the fact that we affect each other. So in this season, we're discussing the change we're bringing to teaching. This conversation matters to me because we have to be honest about the tensions that exist between the change and the growth we're trying to make in our practice, and the fact that making change is a really difficult thing to do. I don't mean to brag, but it is rare that one of your favorite teaching teammates becomes your coworker at a new job. Kim June and I met through some long-term professional development, and then we taught together in the same building for a year. We were even on the SIP team together. But now, she's working with me again at the center part-time, and I'm thrilled. In the conversation you're going to hear with Julie, the two of them share a little bit more about her work, but I'll add that Kim is bringing a tenacity and a joy to the center, and we're all affected by her enthusiasm and thought-provoking questions. Nothing helps you reconsider the status quo like having to explain it to someone as thoughtful as Kim.
Welcome. We're excited to have Kim June working with us this fall and on the podcast. So welcome to CEES, Center for Excellence in STEM Education. What projects are you taking on this fall?
Okay. This fall so far, I have 2 projects that I'm kind of getting a chance to head up and work through. And one will be a homeschool group out of Bay City. And this will be some students and a wide variety of ages that will come to the Bay City Library, and I'll meet with them once a month. And then another one is working with some inner city kids out of Saginaw in a possible dream setting where they'll come to campus and it's a campus kind of experience along with a STEM activity in our center.
Yeah, we're really, those are 2 brand new projects for the center. So we're lucky that Kim is willing to take those on. So what is a goal or idea that you think will drive your interactions with students in either one or both of these settings?
I think the goal for our homeschoolers is
homeschool groups are a great way for families to work together. And a huge part of STEM and learning is the collaboration and the conversation. So we're excited that Kim gets to facilitate a space in which students can do that with each other and with her.
From the social interaction, because they're independent within their house, and that group coming together and bringing all these homes together, getting them to interact with each other, getting the social experience, and learning how to work and frustrate together, both all in one, because that's huge these days. With our second group out of Saginaw, I think we need to, the experience is what it is. These are students that may never have a chance to experience a college or higher education, or understand their options in life that are out there in fields that they wouldn't see every single day. And so this is going to give them a lot of exposure to different kinds of activities. There are different skill levels of what can they do, what are they good at, what are their interests at. So it's really an eye-opening experience, I think, for that group.
Nice. So what's one way you think that either one of these or both of these will differ from your time in the classroom?
This is a question I've been thinking at, because after 31 years of teaching, you don't realize that you get set and molded into a public school setting. You really do. And I would not have said that 2 months ago, until probably about 2 this morning. I realized that when you're in public education, you are molded into this outcome-driven person. Everything you do in the public education system is about the outcome. It's about the outcome. When you ask me if my kids can long divide, I let them do the long division from the outcome. Here's the outcome. They've got it. And now that I look back, I think to myself, I really transformed from the beginning of my career to the end, and not for a good cause, because it's not the outcome that matters. It's the process. And process is where the soft skills are put into place that will allow any outcome to happen. And I started thinking about process. Process is it for every part of your life. Because it happened, it all just come to me at 2 and 3 in the morning. I was thinking, all my life I've been overweight, and people that have a goal, like my goal was to lose weight. Well, I'd get on the scales and you'd lose weight and you'd make that gain, but you were at goal driven. It's not the goal, it's the process. And had the process been done right, you would never have to repeat the goal over and over again, because the process pieces, the healthy diet and exercise would have been put in place. And for kids, the process of being eager learners, and the process of knowing how to research, and the process of how to getting their idea out there, how to take criticism without losing it, and using that criticism to build something better. But it's not, criticism is not negative. It's actually an enhancement to what you've done. And so process has to be the way I really look at things from here on out. What am I gaining in the process? The outcome will always happen, whether I want it to or not, whether I like it or not. But is the process good?
And even that, the idea that, and this is hard for any of us, I think, in life, but that idea that failure is not a bad thing, right? But sort of that, I mean, I learn a lot from failing, yeah. Right? And so it's okay.
Yeah, failure is just the learning of what didn't work. And right. That word failure needs to go away.
Right.
It's just the outcome, and the outcome was not exactly as I envisioned it. Doesn't mean it's wrong. Doesn't mean it's right. It's just not the same.
Right.
Young kids have a great idea about, well, it's just not the same. It's just different. And that has no connotation to them. We as adults have hung it on these racks of negativity. And therefore, now we're stuck in the mold. If I don't make the outcome of as I see it, I failed. And that's got to change.
Well, you are very reflective. deciding that your outcome, that you'd become outcome driven, and going back to this idea of process. I don't feel like a lot of people in education can do that 180 so quickly.
I look at, my peers and my coworkers that was in the group with me, it was outcomes. And everything about public education is outcomes.
Right, so it's a necessity.
Outcomes of your evaluation, your assessments, they're all outcome. Because we can't easily evaluate a process. You can't evaluate someone's soft skills. But yet the soft skills are what will drive and show the outcome.
And your face lights up when you talk about that. It does. How much more fun, right? To be talking about processes than outcomes.
And processes take time.
Yeah.
Processes take interaction time. Processes, I can teach a kid in 2 days to do long divide, multiply, divide, subtract, bring down. I can do that and get that outcome that you want. But the process and understanding of the regrouping and the taking apart, that would take 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And in a time-driven society, it's easy to go to our moms.
So this might have already covered that, but any other questions or nuggets of wisdom you want to impart?
No, I like I said, I felt once I got that process piece locked in my brain, that's it for everything in your life. Every success moment you have is a feeling, a celebration of the process. It's not the outcome. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. you're often embarrassed by the outcome because it is so good in someone else's eyes that you feel like you're over-accoladed. And it's really the process that you went through that really touches who you are. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Those are some good words of wisdom to end this interview on. Thanks, Kim.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I'm sitting back down with Kim June because I was not ready to say, to sign off at the end of your conversation with Julie, because I felt like it was half of the conversation, an important half, but it was just part of the conversation. So I'm bringing you here again because as someone who is still in the middle of her educational career, someone who could go back into the classroom, who has thought about going back into the classroom, and with a bunch of listeners who are likely in the classroom right now, I wanted to talk a little bit about. So you talk about this change in priority over for process over product. How do you bring that energy back into the room? Like if you were going back into the classroom tomorrow, what would you do?
And I'm glad you came back and you gave me some time to think in between my last interview, because I didn't have an answer for this until I just kept thinking and kept thinking. Because if I went back in the classroom, or people that are still in the classroom, you have to have something that you can grasp onto to make change for the better. Educators are built to always make things better. It's in our gene pool. It's who we are. It's every thread of our fiber of our being. And so as I thought about this, I started thinking, what is truly wrong with the present system in place of this whole outcomes-driven developmental model, which came along in the 1990s? And I agree, you have to have a destination. Otherwise, you're going to drive a long way and eventually run out of gas mm-hmm. and never get to where you think you're going. So yes, we have to move kids through an educational system that does have checkpoints, and it does have to have moments where kids can demonstrate the knowledge they've acquired. At the same time, we have to balance that with the change to where we are in this technological age that we're in. You know, the fact that in my day, and I would say both you and I, but we're of different age categories here by far.
Not that far.
Computers, the TRS-80 with the floppy drive disk and the cassette tape were not in your day, but were in mine. And computers were used for nothing more than programming. Mm-hmm. They weren't an access to information. And the days of memorizing facts and the days of memorizing information and proving that kids know these facts and this basic background knowledge and stuff are really gone. That access is right there on their phone. And you can say some kids don't have phones, and I'll disagree with you all day and all night, because they have access to more electronic devices than I've ever dreamed of in my life. You know, from Google and Alexa and their phone and their watch and their, you know, it's just everywhere. The access to basic common fact knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to see that we're still in a system that tests a lot of basic fact content. Mm-hmm. And we as teachers have always driven our developmental model on driven direct fact. And it's not, it's a development model. And that needs to be readdressed. Mm-hmm. This should be a developmental span of how learning occurs for a kid. How do we learn? Mm-hmm. That's what it really has to come back to. How do people learn? Because if I can teach you to learn and I can teach you to think, mm-hmm. then outcomes aren't a problem, because the thinking, the skills to have that happen are in place. Mm-hmm. And so as teachers, I think, is myself speaking, if I went back into the classroom, when you look at those outcomes that are sitting in front of you, I taught fourth grade, so that's my wheelhouse. You know, fourth graders have to long divide. You know, fourth graders have to understand how the three branches of government work. Fourth graders have to understand the states of matter. And I look at those outcomes, I don't need a student who can say solid liquid gas sometimes plasma if you're in space and, you know, divide, multiply, subtract, bring down, divide, multiply, subtract, bring down. And the steps in the exact process
I need to create students who could say, division is a breaking up of a number. And when I break up the number, I can break it up into its different place values. And sometimes I have some things that are left over. And sometimes the leftovers don't matter. Sometimes they do. Sometimes it can be broken up again like a fraction. And understanding what I'm doing with division. And then I can paint on divide, multiply, subtract, bring down. But to do that in my 3 days of long division that it has to be mastered, as a teacher, I've rushed through the process. Mm-hmm. I have put myself ahead of the game, and we're going to practice 3 days of doing the algorithm over and over and over and over again. And if I went back, I would need to spend the 3 days on understanding the concept of division, knowing that truly if the understanding is there, the foundation is truly built on a learning process, a developmental model, then this routine that I'm going to place on top would be easy for the kids to access. Mm-hmm. And you see kids do this all the time. They understand how video games work. Give them any game and they can conquer it in seconds. You don't even know how to move forward or backwards and they've already mastered the whole game. Mm-hmm. Because they understand how these games are developed, that there's hidden chambers, that there's these secret rooms and all this stuff. And I'm given the remote and I don't even know which way is up and down yet. And they have the concept, the developmental models in place for them. So now adding any road on top of it becomes a breeze. Mm-hmm. And so we need to rechange the focus in the classrooms to get the development in place first and then tack on the stuff on top. And trust, because when it comes time for those scores then judge every single one of us educators that are sitting out there, and we know that. And I'm sorry, but teachers don't like to fail. Teachers are competitive beings. We have to have scores that are the best at all times. And if not, it's our fault. We failed. We take it harder than any other group of individuals out there. Mm-hmm. People don't understand how a Friday night you can come home exhausted just because one kid didn't do as well as you thought they could have done. And you've seen them do it, how that crushes our soul and our spirit. So trusting that if you do the development, if you do the process of learning the concepts, then the other piece will fall into place come testing. That's a huge trust. Mm-hmm. Because we don't do it that way. Mm-hmm. So if I went back in the classroom, I'd have to rearrange. I'd have to look at my math outcomes from a whole different perspective. What underlying thinking skill is needed for all of them? Mm-hmm. And you and I know that for math, place value. So let's do place value until the cows come home. Mm-hmm. You know, and when they're there, let's invite the sheep next and let's do it again. And let's keep doing base 10, base 10, base 10 until we can do it inside out, backwards, forward. And then we can easily put base 10s together and add. We can subtract, we can divide, we can multiply, we can do it all because we understand how the system works. Mm-hmm. And then those other pieces would really fly. And they wouldn't take as long as they're taking right now in our public schools.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. And reading, I think reading starting to get on board. And the idea of we're not asking for straight comprehension questions anymore. They're now asking for the thinking process, the comparative processes, those higher Bloom taxonomy pieces. And now it's people like, my reading scores are dropping. Well, yeah, they're dropping because decoding and memorizing of content is no longer what we're testing. Mm-hmm. It's the skill of reading comprehension, embedding yourself in there, applying it yourself to the reading, taking the reading and hanging it on every hanger in your body, your being, seeing how it fits on you. And that's a different kind of teaching. Mm-hmm. You know what it is? And it takes time. That's the big thing, time.
But I would also argue that that kind of teaching feels good. Oh. Like that kind of teaching feels really good. And I don't think there's a teacher I've ever talked to who's like, you know, I really, really love standardized test season. Mm-hmm. Like I just really, really love dropping those kids in front of that computer. That just is my favorite feeling. And what we love is those moments when we're deep in the content with students, when it's back and forth and they're engaged and we're feeling passionate. That's the part that we love. So it's almost like the thing that everybody's craving or needing is the thing that teachers are actually designed to do, right? Like that's why we became teachers in the first place.
Exactly.
So it's remembering that piece and remembering that it doesn't matter if I can memorize each part of speech. It matters that I can use them and apply them. And I understand how the system of language works to communicate effectively. So it's stepping back from that content a little and saying, what are we really talking about here?
Yeah.
To reprioritize where you put your time and energy, because you can't do all of it.
Yeah.
So letting go some of that memorization and focusing instead on the deep stuff, knowing
the foundation is the most important part.
Knowing
I know we can't take away standardized testing, and I will tell you, you're going to think I'm weird, but I actually enjoy moments of standardized testing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the fact when a student can take a number or a result and see that what they've done has really shown growth for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it as a growth piece for kids and for kids to rank and see how they're doing and what I'm doing and my hard work is really paying off, I love that moment, because not often in my small town of Alma, Michigan, do kids get to get out and see kids on their same level.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take a nationalized test and they say, look, I'm as smart as every other fourth grader in the nation. Mm-hmm. How great is that? I am not about this score is low, you're a bad kid, you're a slow kid, you're a Benny Hine kid. No, this score is lower than everybody else's, but this score is higher than I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going in the right path. My mountain is climbing. Mm-hmm. Let's get on board and keep going, because next time, look at where I can be. And then the next time, and then the next time. And that looking for what I'm doing is working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if standardized tests were used truly as a growth entity, and when the score goes down, newsflash, something's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the Maker Station, we're all about failures are your best learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you know what didn't work and you've just learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go on.
You think about it, you uncouple it from like shame and stress and uncouple it from like intrinsic value of that human being. And you say instead, we're detectives and this is just data. This is data that gives us clues into where we are, what we can do, what we can do better. It has its limitations, but it has its purposes. And then it feels a lot safer to talk about it. And it feels more individualized because you're not sitting here saying, no, we're not focusing on like who's ranked third in our class. We're focused on saying, has your bar moved? How is that going for you?
Yeah. And I think we all took that statistics for elementary teachers class.
Sure did.
Statistics can be anything you want. You can line them any way you want. So why not use them for the benefit to encourage kids, the benefit to find out what's not working? Use it as a tool versus a punishment end-all evaluative system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an evaluative tool, because there's plus or minus errors on everything we do in life, plus mm-hmm. or minus errors in our day.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, on any given day, you and I could perform well the next day. Heck, it would be the worst thing we've ever seen. So the sooner the system starts really looking at tests as just a data piece, which we claim it is,
mm-hmm.
We say this is our data. Great. What does our data say? Okay, the reading's not going so well. Okay, so what do we do?
That's not a but we need to stop there and say, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do?
No more conversation about
how sucky it is.
Yeah.
Let's just put it out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who's doing better? Well, she's a better teacher than you. No, she just has some ways that I haven't tried yet. What do you got? Tell mm-hmm. me. If we all run that growth mindset,
mm-hmm.
Those are the districts that are really going to make movement with kids and learning and getting back to what matters, the process, not the product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, moving from public education over here to CMU with STEM, where the product is really the least of our worries, and it's oftentimes not even our worry, it takes away that whole kind of strangling piece that was upon you as a teacher. And I think teachers in the system, it's okay to take it off yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it has to be. You have to be okay with maybe being different than someone else, doing something that looks a little different. And someone might not agree with it. Oh, someone will not agree with it, let's be honest. And that's okay if you feel it's truly in the best interest of those kids and getting them to where you academically want them to be, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're a strong backbone people.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to put that backbone in the right spot.
Yeah. So, I like it.
Someone's not going to like something every time. Guaranteed. There will never be a day you will please everyone. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. See what I mean? She's thoughtful. This has been another episode of Teach Wonder, brought to you by the Center for Excellence in STEM Education. If something you heard today mattered to you, be sure to share this episode with a colleague or a friend. Thanks for listening.